This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Samantha Watson. Troopers are still looking for a Tuksuk Bay man who allegedly kidnapped and fired multiple shots at a tribal police officer in the Nelson Island community. Troopers say they received a report on November 29th that 44-year-old Adrian Kailukiak had taken tribal police officer Gregory Carl hostage at gunpoint, but that another tribal police officer had been able to defuse the situation. According to a trooper affidavit, Kailukiak rammed a snow machine that Carl and his brother were traveling on before pulling a gun on Carl and demanding Carl accompany him to his parents' house. Inside the home, Kailukiak allegedly fired the handgun at Carl and also struck him in the head with the gun. A tribal police officer who responded to the home, where both of Kailukiak's parents were also present, was allegedly able to enter the home and separate the two men. Troopers say Carl was eventually allowed to leave the residence with a fellow tribal police officer. Trooper spokesperson Austin McDaniel says Kailukiak fled Tuksuk Bay before a trooper SWAT team arrived on November 30th. A warrant was issued for his arrest on December 2nd. As of December 16th, McDaniel says troopers have not been able to find him. Tuksuk Bay Tribal Police would not comment when asked why they had not arrested Kailukiak after the incident. Kailukiak has been charged with felony kidnapping, weapons misconduct, and three counts of assault, two for allegedly firing a handgun at Carl, and one for allegedly striking him in the head with the gun. The Small Business Administration, or SBA, has approved more than $3 million in disaster recovery loans for those impacted by Typhoon Halong. The federal agency offers loans to support small organizations across the country, but also has a branch to support those recovering from disasters. The SBA announced last week that it had already approved nearly $3.7 million in loans to restore typhoon-damaged homes for 63 individuals. That's according to Jason Chuddy, who works in the SBA's Office of Disaster Recovery and Resilience. Chuddy says the loan program operates differently from typical bank loans. It aims to approve loans to people who may not have great credit scores or who don't have insurance.
If you go to a regular bank and apply for a loan, the worse credit that you've got, the higher the interest rate you're going to pay. But it's the exact opposite with Small Business Administration. If you have credit available elsewhere, you're going to end up paying more for that loan. But if you generally have less credit score or don't have as much credit, you're going to get that lower rate.
The program is separate from the individual financial assistance offered by FEMA or insurance. The SBA offers loans that must eventually be paid back, and they can accrue interest over time. Chuddy says the loans SBA offers have a lower interest rate than average bank loans, close to 3%, and don't start accruing interest until a year after the loan has been taken out. SBA's disaster assistance loans require collateral, something to be claimed if the individual is unable to pay the loan, like a house or asset. For loans over $50,000, loans under that amount do not require collateral. The SBA is currently offering disaster assistance loans and amounts up to $500,000 for property damage. In some cases, applicants are eligible to receive an additional loan of $100,000 to replace household items.
And what's very unique for this Alaska situation is we actually approved loans for subsistence camps. So things like camp gear, hunting and fishing and cooking gear, even vehicles. If you use a vehicle like a boat or a snow machine to get back and forth between your subsistence camp, those are eligible if they were destroyed.
Chetty says actual structures other than houses, including fish camps and sheds, cannot be covered in the loans. It may be difficult to pay the loan back, especially after a disaster. Chuddy says the SBA offers long pay periods, as much as 30 years, and aims to approve individuals it believes can eventually pay the loans back.
But when it comes down to the payments, we hope that everybody gets a loan amount that they're able to repay, and we give them a good enough time period where it won't be a huge, hopefully won't be a huge financial burden on them.
The SBA has set up an outreach office in Bethel City Hall through this week to help individuals apply for loans to help rebuild homes and replace lost property related to the typhoon. The SBA has extended its application deadline for loans to February 22nd. There is no cost to apply for an SBA loan and no commitment to take the money if approved. For those interested in applying for an SBA disaster assistance loan, the Bethel pop-up office is running from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays through Friday, December 19th, with the possibility of another pop-up in January, according to Chetty. Chetty says to show up with a valid ID and a list of damages. You can also apply online at lending.sba.gov or by calling 1-800-659-2955. That's 1-800-659-2955. The Arctic continues to warm faster than other parts of the world and is experiencing record high temperatures and record low levels of sea ice. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which released its annual report card for the region yesterday. As the Alaska Desk's Alonia Nyden reports, those findings directly affect Alaska communities.
The Arctic report card has been documenting changes in snow and sea ice cover, as well as air and ocean temperatures in the northern part of the globe for the past 20 years. It has shown that in that time, the Arctic's annual temperature has increased at more than double the global rate of temperature changes. Hannah Marie Ladd is the director of Indigenous Sentinels Network, a tribally owned program that helps Alaska Native communities monitor their environment. She's also a lead author of this year's Arctic Report card for the chapter about community-led observations on St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea.
These changes cascade directly into people's lives, affecting fisheries, coastal safety, and subsistence harvests. We are no longer just documenting warming. We are witnessing an entire marine ecosystem, which is tied to our economies and culture, transform within a single generation.
Ladd was one of roughly half a dozen speakers from various research agencies who detailed this year's report at a press conference. The report is the work of more than 100 authors from 13 countries. One big takeaway is that the Arctic region experienced some of the highest temperatures since the turn of the century. Matthew Druckenmiller is a senior scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado and lead editor of this year's report.
October 2024 through September 2025, the Arctic experienced the highest temperatures on record since at least 1900. This included the warmest autumn, the second warmest winter, and the third warmest summer ever observed.
The rapid warming of the Arctic is amplified by the loss of reflective sea ice and snow. The report showed that last March, Arctic winter sea ice reached its lowest annual maximum extent in nearly 50 years of satellite records. Druckenmiller says that the oldest, thickest ice has also declined by over 95% since the 80s.
This thinner ice is then much more mobile with wind and current and much less resilient against warming waters. This means much more unpredictable ice conditions for those both living and working in the Arctic.
The Arctic is changing on land too. The report highlights an emerging phenomenon called rusting rivers. That's when permafrost thaw causes groundwater to seep deeper and interact with mineral deposits, which likely turns some streams and rivers to a rusty orange color. Abigail Pruitt is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of California, Davis, who studies rusting rivers. She says that in Alaska, over 200 streams turned orange in recent years, and that affected aquatic biodiversity and water quality.
Within Kobuk Valley National Park, we observed the complete loss of juvenile Dolly Varden and Slimy Sculpin in a tributary to the Akilik River when it turned orange. Beyond the effects on fish, rusting rivers may impact drinking water supplies to rural communities as well.
The report highlights how Indigenous communities have been observing the changes in the environment and wildlife and collaborating with scientists to better understand those changes. Ladd with the Indigenous Sentinels Network describes one example of such work. She says that St. Paul residents collect samples of harvested traditional foods, like seabirds, marine mammals, and halibut. Those samples are tested in a tribally owned lab and, with the help from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, analyzed for contaminants like mercury. She says it is a model for resilience, data sovereignty, and collaborative research.
Indigenous leadership, local workforce development, and community-driven observing are not optional. They are essential to understanding the Arctic that we have today and preparing for the Arctic we are moving into.
In response to your question about how federal cuts to climate science might affect the future of the Arctic Report Card, NOAA officials said that they will continue their efforts to observe the change in environment. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naiden.
This is KYUK News. I'm Samantha Watson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Gnomchit coming up.